forces who are impelling, the impelling factors for action to take place. Even the time of the day or night can be classified according to the three gunas. What is the time of the day that is in Sattva-guna? Early morning. Early morning time, Brahma Muhurta, especially before sunrise, is in Sattva-guna. Rajagun, the daytime, when the sun is up and everybody is running here and there, busy in their activities of livelihood. And night is in Tamogun, because everybody sleeps. So, in this way, all the characteristics or all the features in this world are under the influence of these three modes. So, these three modes are impelling, forcing the senses to act in a certain way. When the senses come in contact with Tamogun, they get influenced and then they act in that way. Similarly with all the other modes. So, these three modes are not just quality, but the word guna also means rope. What is a rope used for? Tie, binding. So these gunas are actually binding us to this world. They are the cause of our bondage. Actually, we are the spirit soul, we are Atma. We have nothing to do with these three modes of material nature. We have nothing to do with this Prakriti. We are purely spiritual sparks. We are part and parcel of Supreme Lord Sri Krishna. But somehow, we are stuck in this Prakriti and we are under the control of Prakriti. So Prakriti, consisting of three modes, has tied us, wrapped us, and we are bound in the cycle of karma and in the cycle of birth and death. Now, someone living in Sattva-guna is living a very peaceful life. He is a philosopher, he is a poet, he is peaceful, he is honest, he doesn't harm anyone, he is soft-spoken, he is kind, he is compassionate, he is Sattva-guni. Somebody very passionate, he is running whole day for enjoyment, more money, more enjoyment, more this, more that. And the Tamoguni person, he is whole day drinking, sleeping, doing all kinds of abominable activities, lying, stealing. So this is a Tamoguni person. Now, all three are bound. All three are prisoners. The only difference between these three is that the Sattva-guna person, he is bound with a golden rope. The Rajaguni person is bound with a silver rope, and a Tamaguni person is bound with iron rope or iron chains. That's the only difference. In other words, the cause, the external appearance of the bondage is different. Suppose there's someone who's in a jail, one is living in a nice compartment or cell in the jail, which has air conditioning or which has some nice facility, but he's still in the jail. He's still not free, and somebody may be in a very harsh condition in the jail. So therefore we understand that jail is jail, whether one is in a good cell or in a bad cell. Similarly, all living beings, whether in Sattva-guna, Rajaguna or Tamaguna, are bound by these three modes. And all these three modes are always interacting with each other. Sattva-guna is mixing with Raja, Raja is mixing with Tama, Sattva mixed with Tama. So from three modes, you get 9, 9 multiplied by 3, 27, 27 multiplied by 3, 81, and so on. By more and more combinations and permutations of the modes, you get so much variety in this world. What is the cause of variety in this world? No two people are the same, isn't it? Even twin brothers. Are they going to be identical? No. So why is there variety? Why is there so much of individuality here amongst all of us? Because the three modes of nature are acting in different combinations. There is sattva, rajas, tamas with somebody, sattva is stronger with him. Rajas and tamas is less stronger. With somebody, rajaguna is stronger, the other two are less stronger. So we are all under the control of different combinations of the three modes of nature. And that is responsible for producing all the varieties of living beings and all the varieties of things in the whole universe. So see how important it is for us to understand this concept of the three modes of material nature. So actually, we are all puppets in the hands of the three modes of material nature. A person who is under the tamogun, he acts under the dictation of tamogun. A person who is in rajogun acts according to the dictation of rajogun. This is the nature. A person is forced by the mode to act accordingly, by association, by sangha. If I am associating with rajogun, then gradually the rajogun starts controlling me. For example, we have seen so many times, a man starts associating with in bad company. He is not drinking, he is not smoking, he is not gambling, nothing. He is okay, good man. But he starts associating with a group of friends who do all these things. So they are in tamogun. He starts associating with those in tamogun, that is with tamogun. Then what happens? He also comes under the influence of tamogun. By association, by sangha. So when there is sangha, then there is influence of that guna on that person. Then that person becomes controlled by that guna. Then, practically speaking, he loses his independence. Then, he is dictated by that tamogun. Whenever he passes by that liquor shop, something is forcing him. His legs automatically take a turn and go to that shop. He is not in control of his situation. He is completely a victim of the mold. Similarly, a person who is very kind, he is under influence of sattva-gun, and whatever may happen, he will continue to be kind even to his own thief, a thief in his own house. That is his nature, he is bound by that action, he will be kind. He said, chodo, chodo, it's alright, come on, it's okay, poor fellow, let him go. He is also a poor man, he has come to steal in my house, let him go. So he is also bound by his own nature. You know the story of that Brahmin who was taking bath in Ganga, and as he was taking water of Ganga to offer to Ganga, suddenly in his hands there came a scorpion, bichu, and it stung him. As a natural reaction, he dropped the scorpion. It fell in the water and it was drowning. Suddenly he picked up the scorpion because it was drowning. He did not want that to die. Picked again the scorpion, stung again because there was pain. He spontaneously dropped it. Again he picked it up. Again it stung. So a person was standing close by. He said, my dear Brahman, why are you doing this? You see, again and again the scorpion is stinging you. It is biting you. And it could be very dangerous for you. But still you are going on saving the scorpion. So the Brahman replied. He said, see, I am a Brahman. And I am controlled by my nature. My nature is to forgive. My nature is to have compassion and kindness in all living beings. So I am acting according to my nature. I am forced according to my nature to act like this. This scorpion is in tamogun. His nature is to hurt even someone who is not at fault. He is envious by nature, so he stings everyone and anyone without any discrimination. So he is bound by his nature. He is not at fault. So he is simply acting according to his nature and I am acting according to my nature. So both of us are acting according to his nature. So this is the meaning of conditioning by the modes. When we come under influence of that mode, we become controlled. So these modes control our senses and force the senses to act in a particular way. So therefore, this is the meaning of what Lord Krishna is explaining over here. Prakriti kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashah. That it is actually prakriti that is acting through our senses. And this prakriti is not acting independently. Prakriti is under the control of whom? Of Lord Krishna. Lord Krishna says in the Gita, Mayadhyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam hetunanena kaunteya jagat viparivartate. Maya adhyakshena prakriti. This prakriti or material nature is moving according to my direction, O Arjun. So the hidden hand behind prakriti's operation is Krishna. Krishna's remote control is going on. So Prakriti is working by Krishna's remote control. Just as a shadow moves according to the object. If there is a light and you put your hand and you see the shadow of your hand on the floor, according to how you move your hand, the shadow will move. There are many people who are expert at shadow play. There is an art. There are many people, just like puppetry is an art. There are many people who enact whole dramas with just shadow play. They will move their fingers only in such a way that it will make figures on the screen. And then figures of a cat or a dog or two human beings talking. So it requires great expertise to know how, what kind of shadow will come when you move your fingers in a certain way. So Krishna is like that expert shadow magician. By his will, the Prakriti is moving in certain ways. The three gunas are moving up and down. So the Prakriti is not independent. Prakriti is an energy of Krishna. And the living being, under the influence of ignorance, being bewildered by the modes of nature, starts thinking that he is actually the controller. But actually, however big a controller one may be in this world, still one is controlled by the three modes. The three modes are the biggest controller here. There may be a tiger. A tiger is the most powerful animal in the forest. So powerful, sometimes the tiger may get proud. Just see, just by my one roar, all the animals are running away. If I just jump on somebody, I will kill. Everybody is afraid of my power. But even though the tiger is so powerful, he is under the control of the modes of nature, and therefore he has to go hungry. Because all the animals flee in fear of the tiger. Whenever they know the tiger is there, the birds start, first of all, screeching. The monkeys in the trees start screeching. So all the animals are warned beforehand, and they run away from there. So even though tiger is so powerful, he cannot even get daily food properly. Similarly, the king. King may be the master of the whole land, but at any moment, he may die. He may get a disease and nothing can be done. So all are under the control of the three modes of material nature. It is only the ignorant person who starts thinking that I am doing all these things. And so long as we are under the control of this material nature, there can be no unity. Because being under the three modes of nature means that various permutations and combinations will act to create this unity. Only when we are under the spiritual energy of Lord Krishna, then there can be total unity. Nowadays it is becoming a very common argument that religion is a cause of so many problems, specifically of so many wars, correct? We have been discussing. And everybody is saying nowadays, it is becoming fashionable to argue that you should do away with religion because religion is causing so many problems. And then they cite examples from history. This war, this war, this war, all these wars have taken place because of religion. Therefore, religion must be banned. Of course, they do not appreciate that wars have taken place from time immemorial and for a variety of reasons, and religion is just one of them. If religion is to be banned because it is supposed to be the cause of war, then nationhood should be banned because one country is fighting against the other on the basis of nationhood. All languages should be banned because people fight against each other on the basis of language. As with Bangladesh and Pakistan, we have same religion but different language, they fought with each other. So we should ban all variegatedness in life and everybody should be the same. Then there will be no battle. But still that doesn't happen. Even if everyone is of same religion, same language, same community, same caste, same creed, still there will be fighting. Am I right? Even within same family there will be fighting. Even within the same mind there is fighting. So religion is not the cause of quarrel or war. What is the root cause of the problem that is stimulating all these wars? The three modes of nature. It is simply Rajagun and Tamagun. That is all. So why this Iran and Iraq are fighting? All the both are Islamic countries. Modes of nature. Both are praying to Allah to protect them and make them victorious. In the first, second world war, who were the countries fighting with each other? On both sides they were Christian countries. Both were praying to Jesus Christ to save them and to make them victorious. So Srila Prabhupada explained that this is just like when a school teacher, he sees that two children in his class are making mischief. So he calls them, says, come here. And he makes them face each other in front of the class, tells one boy, you pull the other boy's ears. And he tells the other boy, you pull this boy's ears. So both of them are pulling each other's ears and punishing each other. So the school teacher is handing out the punishment in this way for their mischief. So similarly, Lord Krishna is seeing, these people are all sinful, simply violating my instructions, simply under the spell of Rajagun and Tamagun. Therefore, under the influence of Rajagun and Tamagun, they are fighting with each other, quarreling, killing. And then the blame goes to religion. The religion has nothing to do with it. True religion has no role to play here. It is simply the spark caused by the friction of Rajagun and Tamagun inside. This is the fundamental cause. If we come to a higher modes of nature, if we come to the sattva platform and then from there to the spiritual platform, then factually this world will be a very peaceful place. Lord Krishna has taught a lot about this concept in Bhagavad Gita. Therefore, we are discussing this subject at such length. And because people are under the different combinations of these three modes, so quarrels also have different natures. Sometimes it may be on the basis of religion, sometimes language, but fundamentally it is not different. Prabhupada gives the example that in a hospital, what kind of people do you find? Patients. You find patients in a hospital. What is the commonality among all of them? They are diseased. They are infected by some germs. What is the difference between them? Different types of diseases. Different types of germs have attacked them. So in the same way, as there is variety in a hospital, because although all people are diseased, but the variety of diseases are different because of the different germs have attacked them, in the same way, all of us here in this material world are infected by different combinations of the three modes of nature, and therefore there is so much variety, and these varieties are always clashing and rubbing against each other, producing friction. And when there is friction, there is heat, there is war, there is quarrel, and so on. So an intelligent person understands, I am the Atma. I am simply servant of Lord Krishna. I am not the doer of activities. It is only the three modes of material nature that are impelling my senses that are actually performing these actions. So now we will briefly discuss text number 28 and then we will stop the discussion here. Tattva-vittu Mahabaho Guna-karma-vibhagayoha Guna-guneshu-vartanta Iti-matvana-sajjate. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. One who is in knowledge of the Absolute Truth, O mighty armed, does not engage himself in the senses and sense gratification, knowing well the differences between work in devotion and work for fruitive results. So here again, Krishna is explaining the difference between the attached and the detached worker. And what makes the difference between the two? The difference is that the one in knowledge, who is called Tattva-vit. Vit means to know, Tattva means truth. The detached worker is tattvavit, the knower of the truth, because he does not identify himself with these three gunas, sattva, rajas, tamas. He understands that I am separate from these gunas, I am separate from the products of these gunas, I have no relationship to these gunas, I am simply a spiritual spark, I am pure spiritual substance, whereas these gunas are material. This is not conscious, but I am conscious. He understands this extremely well, and therefore he is convinced of his awkward position of bondage in this material world. So Lord Krishna is explaining here that the tattvavit, the wise person, knows that as a spirit soul he is eternally part and parcel of Lord Krishna, and in his pure state of existence he is meant to serve Lord Krishna with love and devotion. But however, because he has come under the spell of the three modes of material nature, he has forgotten his constitutional position and now is suffering. Therefore the tattvavit, not identifying himself with the three gunas or the products of the three gunas, he becomes peaceful even in the midst of difficult circumstances, knowing that I am different from all these things. Whether there is happiness, whether there is distress, he is completely detached and aloof. And if at all there are sufferings that come in life, he considers them to be the mercy of the Supreme Lord. In this way, Lord Krishna will continue from the next verse also to describe the difference between the attached worker and the detached worker. What is our goal? What should we be? We should become attached workers or detached workers? Detached workers. And what does it mean to be a detached worker? Yes. Detached worker means not that he is detached from the work. He is detached from the fruits of the work. Therefore, he should work, but he should use the fruits in the service of Lord Krishna. All his activities should be dovetailed for the pleasure of Lord Krishna. This is the meaning of a truly detached worker. And on the other hand, the attached worker is one who is simply working for his sense gratification. This is the essential difference. So we will stop here and continue with the same subject next time. And we can have questions after the darshan is over. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions? Can a sattvaguni person attract a rajaguni person? Welcome to our Saturday Bhagavad Gita class. Since we are on chapter 3, we will all begin chanting all the verses. Krishna. In our discussion of the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, from text 25, we have seen Krishna begin the comparison between the attached worker and the detached worker. Just to recapitulate the background a little bit, in this chapter, Lord Krishna has emphasized that artificial renunciation is not desirable and it is not even possible, and it is in fact harmful. Rather, one who is not internally renounced should not externally renounce. And those who are internally attached should act in this world. But how does one who is internally attached know how to act in this world? When he sees the examples of those people working who are not attached to the fruits of their action. If someone is not attached to the fruits of his action, then in the first place he is not obliged to work at all. So why does he work? to set an example to the rest of the world. Lord Krishna has cited the examples of great kings like Janak, and he has cited even his own example and said that being the Supreme Lord, he has no need to perform any prescribed duties or to perform any action whatsoever, but nevertheless he does so because otherwise people would follow in his footsteps, and in the inaction or wrong actions that would follow, the whole world would be ruined. We have also spoken at length, as a word of caution, that we cannot try to imitate Lord Krishna when he apparently violates the laws of morality or dharma that are applicable for us human beings. The laws of morality are made by God for man, and it is wrong on the part of man to impose these restrictions and rules upon God and expect him to follow and criticize him if he doesn't follow and to imitate him when he doesn't follow. Because, as we have seen in the last two Saturdays, if one who is not a controller tries to imitate someone who is a controller, then he will simply be destroyed. So one should rather follow in the footsteps of such great controllers by following their instructions rather than by trying to imitate them. So it is better in this world to act but without attachment to the fruits of the action. By dedicating those fruits to the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna, rather than to artificially try to renounce. Now we have seen in text 25, Lord Krishna is declaring that those who are detached from the fruits of their action, those who are self-realized, should also act in this world, just as the ignorant person acts with attachment to the fruits of his activities. So also, the knowledgeable person should act, but without attachment to the fruits. So the only difference between one who is attached to the fruits of the action and one who is not, is a difference of consciousness, of motivation, of desire, of mentality. Externally, their actions may appear to be very similar or even identical, like the example of Arjun and Duryodhan fighting in the battle of Kurukshetra. But we know that there is a gulf of difference between the two. We also spoke last time that how can we identify a person who is detached and a person who is attached if externally both of them appear to be very similar. There may be two people working in an office, or there may be two businessmen, or two housewives, or two students. How does one compare if they are doing similar activities externally? How does one know who is attached and who is not attached to the fruits of the action? Does anyone remember what the answer is? How does one understand? How does one judge whether one is attached or one is detached from the fruits of one's actions? Does one believe his words? If somebody says, "I am detached from the fruits of my action," do we just simply believe him? Or is there some symptom? There is a symptom. What is that symptom? Yes, the fruits of the action. Whenever we perform any work, there is some fruit. When you plant a seed, there is a fruit. So every karma is like a seed. And when you plant that seed, in other words, when you perform that work, it is going to bring some fruit for you. So that fruit may be of various kinds. What kind of fruit do people work for in this world? A person is doing a job, or a businessman is doing his business. What kind of fruits do they look for? Money. A businessman is looking for money. A person is working in a job for the salary. That is one of the fruits. So many other fruits may be there. So the distinguishing factor between a person who is attached to the fruits of action and one who is not is in how they use the fruits of their actions. When we say that he is detached, practically what does it mean? Detached means, does he earn his salary and just keep it at the bank and say, detached? I am detached, I will not touch my salary. I will just keep it in the bank and I will not use it. I am detached. In a sense, that is detachment. In one sense. But there is a higher sense of detachment. That is when that money is used for the service of Lord Krishna. Srila Prabhupada used to give the example often that if there is a purse fallen on the street, there are three kinds of things that a person could do when he's passing by and he sees that purse. One is, he could lift that, see that nobody is watching, pocket the money and go away. The second is, he can see there is somebody's purse, he checks his wallet, oh, it is not my purse, he goes away quietly, he doesn't touch the purse. The third option is, the person lifts the purse, opens it, sees the address of the person who owns it and returns it to him. What is the first case? It is a case of theft. So, all the property in this world belongs to God. The fruits of our activities also belong to God. So therefore, the fruit should go to Him. But if I am enjoying the fruits of my actions, I am using the fruits only for my sense gratification, then I am what? Thief. Then I am a thief. In Srimad Bhagavatam it is said, Saspenaha dandam arhati. Such a person is a thief and he is deserving of punishment. So anyone who uses the fruits of his actions in his own for his own pleasure is a thief and deserves to be punished. But incidentally, before we go on to the next case, why do the fruits of our actions belong to Krishna? Can anyone answer? I am doing the work, day and night I am working hard. I am using my intelligence, I am using my talents, my skill, my money, my physical strength, my contacts, my ability, everything is mine. I am using and I am producing the fruits of the action. So why do we say that the fruits belong to Krishna? Why are the fruits not mine? And then why am I punished when I try to enjoy the fruits of my actions? So the question that I am placing before you is, why do we say that the fruits of our action are Krishna's property? Why not mine when I am doing the work? Can anyone answer? Everything belongs to Krishna, that is true. But I am working, isn't it? I am working hard. Krishna is not working hard. I am working hard. Krishna is playing flute in Vrindavan. He is enjoying. Power of giving is his. That is correct. Absolutely correct. Yes. Yes, that is one answer, that is a correct answer. That whatever actions we perform, the fruit is awarded by Lord Krishna. He is the giver of the results of our action. It is not in our hands. If it were so, every businessman in every transaction would make a profit. Does it happen? Every employee with every year would get a promotion. Does it happen? No. It means that the fruits of action are not in our control. If they are not in our control, in whose control are they? In God's control. What is the second reason for saying that the fruits of action are not ours, that we have no right to them and that only Krishna has the right? Just logic based upon your understanding of Gita. Any other answer? Why do I say the fruits belong to Krishna? How do I perform action? What is necessary for me to act in this world? What are the things I need to act? But then if he is cause of all causes, then why I am blamed, why I am punished? The ultimate cause only should be punished. Yes, that is right. But why I am not the proprietor of the fruits of my action? Yes, but still the question is not answered. What is it that is responsible? What are the factors that are involved when I perform an action? Suppose I am doing my business. I may make a profit, I may make a loss. So it requires so many things for me to do my business, isn't it? So what are the things required? Intelligence, correct? What else? Mind, funds, ability, so many things. You need strength, physical strength, something. Otherwise you cannot go to your office to work. So you need all these things. Intelligence, ability, mind, speech, some skill you need. So, who gives us the intelligence? Whose intelligence is it? Buddhir buddhimatam asmi. Lord Krishna says, the buddhi is coming from me. I am the source of the buddhi. Balam balavatam chaham. I am the strength of the strong. The strength is coming from me. Everything that we have, with which we are able to perform our karma, is coming from Krishna. It is Krishna's. Therefore, the ability is Krishna's, the intelligence is Krishna's, we have taken on loan. On loan, Krishna has given us some little intelligence, some little ability, some little speech, power of speech and so on. And with that we are using. But because there is loan, there is hypothecation. You know what is hypothecation? That means the property is attached. Attached means, suppose you take a loan from a bank. Then the bank will say, you want to buy a house, we will mortgage your property. The property will be in our name till you pay back the loan. Correct? So like that, because Krishna is loaning us the intelligence, the strength and everything, and then we are using that, and he says, fruits are mortgaged, they are mine. Because you are using my property to do all these things, so fruits are my property, I have right over them. So because Krishna is the one who supplies us everything with which we do our actions, so the fruits also rightfully belong to Him. Even in the case of losses. No, Krishna, if we are genuinely detached from the results of the actions, then Krishna will take the profit, He will also take the loss. But generally what will people do? They will attribute the profits to ourselves and loss to God. But actually we should be equal in both situations. So this is the reason why we have no right over the fruits of our action. So to come back to our earlier discussion, the first person who picks up the purse and goes away and enjoys is like the person who enjoys the fruits of his action, and such a person is called a thief because he's enjoying something that does not belong to him. The second person who neglects or ignores that purse is like the person who gets his money or gets the fruit of his action and doesn't use it at all. Like the person gets his salary, it is there in the bank but he doesn't touch it. So it's not wrong, but it is not fully correct also. And the third person is superior because he understands to whom the purse belongs and he returns it to that person. Similarly, the person who is wise and is acting in this world knows that the actions will bring reactions. There will be fruit. So that fruit must be offered with love and devotion to the person who owns them. That is Krishna. So he offers these fruits with love and affection to him. This is Karma Yoga. In the 9th chapter of the Gita, Lord Krishna explains, Yat karoshi, yad ashnasi, yad juhosi, tadasi, yat. Yat tapasyasi kaunteya tat kurushva madarpanam. He says, Arjuna, whatever actions you perform, whatever food you eat, whatever charity you give away, whatever austerities you perform, do as an offering unto me. So everything has to be offered to Lord Krishna, especially the fruits of action. So the person who is ignorant is attached to the fruits. The person who is wise offers those fruits to Krishna. So the test of the difference between the two kinds of workers is, how does one use the fruits of the labor? And in very practical terms, as we discussed last time, it boils down to how you use your, what is it? Money. Because money is the most important fruit for which people work in this world. As the saying goes, Prahlad says in Bhagavatam, money is honey. very sweet. So money is honey, therefore people are very attached to money. So that money, or how you use your money, is a test of whether one is an attached worker or one is a detached worker. A very practical litmus test to understand. So the one who is detached genuinely will use his money for Krishna's service and will keep a basic amount for own maintenance of keeping body and soul together. Whereas the attached worker will use the money and all the other fruits that come with it for his own sense gratification. So Lord Krishna has emphasized in 25, text number 25, that the detached person should also work externally just like the attached worker, but he should do so without attachment. And in text 26, Lord Krishna has explained that the detached worker must not disrupt the mind of the attached worker in the sense that he must not try to make him artificially renounced. Vairagya, he should not try to artificially bring about vairagya, force him to do vairagya. Why? Because vairagya can come only when there is jnana. Jnana comes only when the heart is pure. And the heart becomes pure only when nishkam karma is performed. So artificially the people of this world cannot renounce. So what should the attached worker do? The attached worker should be engaged in works of service to the Lord. So one who is wise, the detached worker, who understands the science of work, yoga karmasu kaushalam, one who understands the art and the science of work in this world, he engages himself in the Lord's service, and simultaneously he engages the ignorant attached worker also in God's service. And from text 27, now in text 27 Lord Krishna is going to describe the thinking, the mentality of a person who is attached to the fruits of his actions. This is a very famous verse. So let us all chant text number 27. Prakritah kriyamanani gunahi karmani sarvashah ahankara vimudhatma kartaham iti manyate. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. The spirit soul, bewildered by the influence of false ego, thinks himself to be the doer of activities that are in actuality carried out by the three modes of material nature. Very important shloka for us to understand how things are going on. Lord Krishna is here talking about the attached worker. And he says, the spirit soul, bewildered by the influence of false ego, vimurha atma, he thinks, I am the doer, karta aham iti manyate. He thinks that I am the performer of activities. But actually, what is performing activities? Prakritih kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashah. It is the material nature which consists of the three gunas, sattva guna, rajaguna, tamaguna, that is actually performing all the actions. And because the jivatma becomes bewildered by the three modes of material nature, therefore he thinks, I am the doer of these activities. In this world, when we act, it is our senses that act. Our karmendriyas, our jnanendriyas. Karmendriyas means our hands, our legs, our voice, and so on. We are working in this world with the help of the jnanendriyas, which get knowledge. I am seeing you, I am hearing you, I am able to feel the breeze around me. So by my senses, I am able to understand and act in this world. So the jnanendriyas and the karmendriyas are my agents. So they are actually acting, but they are being impelled by the three gunas, rajagun, sattvagun, and tamagun. So what are these three gunas? Does anyone know? Can anyone define what are these three gunas? What is sattva guna, rajagun, tamagun? What is it? What are these three things actually? You have all heard many times in the lectures in Gita class. Perhaps you have read in Bhagavad Gita many times. He is only engaged in unclean work, in the mode of ignorance. That is correct, but that is only a partial answer, because it is describing a worker in the three modes. But the concept of the three modes, what exactly do we mean sattva, rajas, tamas? What is it exactly? Because this concept is very fundamental to Bhagavad Gita. That is as far as the individual is concerned. But in the whole universe, but what is this sattva guna, rajaguna, tamaguna? No, but what is it exactly? What is, when we say this is sattva guna, what is this sattva guna? What are these three gunas? Yes, that is right. But what are these three modes of material nature? I don't know anything of Bhagavad Gita. You have to explain to me. You are saying three modes of material nature, sattva guna, rajaguna, tamaguna. I have no idea what is this three modes. That is the result of being in sattva guna. That is a worker in sattva guna. But what is the meaning of sattva guna? What is the three gunas? Yes, that is the answer. Three qualities of what? Not only of human nature, of material nature. Of nature as such, the whole material creation has three qualities. Guna. You know the word guna, right? Guna means quality. So the whole material nature that Lord Krishna has created has three qualities. And these three qualities are called sattva, rajas and tamas. And they are all pervasive in this creation. There is no place in the creation where these three modes are not acting. There is no event, no phenomenon, no person, no thing where the influence of these modes is not present. It is everywhere. Prakriti is constituted of these three modes. Prakriti is made up of these three modes. You cannot separate prakriti from this, the three gunas. When you say prakriti, immediately three gunas comes in the picture. Just like a human being has so many qualities, you cannot separate the qualities from him. So the three gunas are qualities which cannot be separated from prakriti. They are inherently there in prakriti. And because of this, they produce different effects. They act in different ways. In conjunction with time, they create different effects in this world. So everything in this creation that we see can be characterized or classified under three modes of nature. Now, what some of you have very correctly described is a worker in the three modes. A human being who is acting in sattva guna, rajaguna, tamaguna. That is very correct. But it is not only human beings who are governed by the three modes. Even animals. There are animals in sattva guna, animals in rajaguna, animals in tamaguna. Can you mention some animals in sattva guna? Cow. In rajaguna? Tiger, lion. In tamaguna? Monkey, donkey, camel. These are animals in tamaguna. Can you mention the place according to guna? We have so many, no? We have mountains, we have jungle, we have sea, we have city, village. No. Huh? Yes? Jungle is in sattva guna. Then? Jungle, mountains, same. The villages, let's say, or even the cities, you can say, are in mode of passion. And places like the liquor houses and so on, they are mode of ignorance. What is temple? Shuddha sattva is beyond the three modes, because it is totally spiritual. So now you are in a place that is characterized by spiritual guna, not material guna. Even food can be sattva guna, rajaguna, tamaguna. What is food in the mode of Satvagun? Rice? No, anything. The same food can be in either of the three gunas, depending on the quality. Foods that are juicy, nourishing, fattening, fresh, which are not products of violence, like fruits, vegetables, grains, milk, nuts, this is Satvaguni food. What is Rajaguni food? Hot and spicy, masaledar, oily, spicy, very chilly. Such foods are Rajaguni foods. Tamasic foods, Tamaguni foods, liquor, meat. Meat because it is a product of violence and also because it is stale food. Stale means dirty. Stale means impure, contaminated. So all meat products, egg. Nowadays there is a fashionable concept of vegetarian egg that is coming up. But without getting into the controversy, we can simply mention vegetarian or non-vegetarian egg, egg is still tamasic. Therefore to be avoided. Clothing. Clothing can be in Sattvagun, Rajagun, Tamagun. Housing can be in Rajagun, Tamagun, Sattvagun. Everything you think of, you name it and you can classify under the three modes. There is nothing, livelihood, your source of livelihood can be Rajagun, Tamagun, Sattvagun. Everything in creation, even all living beings can be classified under the three modes. The devatas, the devis and devatas are under Sattvagun, relatively. The human beings are in Rajagun, relatively. And the animals are in Tamagun. So relative to the animal, the human being is
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Radha Gokula Nanda Radha Gokula Nanda Radhe Jaya Radha Gokula Nanda Radha Gokula Nanda Radhe Gauranitai, 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 Jaya Gauranitai. Jaya Jagannathai, Jagannathai, Baladeva, Jaya Subhadra. Jaya Prabhupada, 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 Jaya Prabhupada. Nitagar Haribol, 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 Nitagar Haribol.